Blog Talk Radio.
TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. Talk radio show.
Social Lab Team Hyman Radio, one of my favorite shows. I know it is. HD President Touchdown, you inside the Social Lab Team Hyman Radio. Hey, one of my favorite people hanging out with me live right here in ATL, Miss Vernita Adele White. Listen, she's a clubhouse favorite. She's one of them superstars. Be blazing them clubhouse streets, founder of America's Hot Sauce. Hey, tonight we are talking diversity, equity, and inclusion, and the one that was recently added, belonging, with one of my favorites. She's right here in ATL, and we are inside the Social Lab. Hey, it's 9:04 on the East Coast, 6:04 on the West Coast, TMATL, hot chocolate on the other side. What's cracking?
What it do, TM Hyman Radio family, Social Lab peeps? What's going on this motivational Monday? Get hype. Get ready.
Man. Hey, Monday indeed. Football season in full motion. Man,
and how about my
football.
Cowboys like, last night? Yeah.
Hey, well, no comment.
Don't get cute now. Let's not.
I'm not a hater. I am not a hater.
I'm saying the Cowboys won and the Eagles lost. I'm just saying. It was a good day.
Yeah, we know Sleepy Green and, you know, Kirk,
right.
You know,
and Boogie,
those
right.
Dudes not happy,
yeah, the
right?
Fellas
Boogie
are
not
happy.
Shout out to them Cowboys. Coming to us live from Charlotte, North Carolina, but I don't think she's in Charlotte. I think she's traveling. Madam CeeLo Boston, how do you do?
Hey, good afternoon in the morning time. How do you do?
Gang, gang.
Hey, doing well.
All day.
Doing very, very well. But nice to hear your voice. You are
yes,
back.
Yes, ma'am.
Recovering. Welcome back.
Yes. Thank you.
Welcome.
Yes, I feel way. Yes,
the
that's a great thing.
Bad parts out. Look, they took the bad parts out. You know I like to be vague.
They took the bad parts. They took the bad parts out of your body.
We need them no more.
We all need the bad parts taken out of our bodies. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, gang, gang, for sure. It's the Social Lab. Team on Radio. Hey, a special guest tonight, Miss Vernita Dell White. Listen, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. Belonging is really the part that I like because she want to make sure that we at the table. She want to make sure we belong to every conversation. She want to make sure that our voice is a part of every decision. She want to make sure that our money is stretching across every industry. Listen. She's really my ace. And this is the second time that we've been able to do a face-to-face. But I just want her to lean in because we both are vaccinated, and we're sharing a mic tonight because one of the mics won't work. Hey, go ahead and introduce yourself to the people, my friend.
I love it. Hey, family, this is Vernita Adele White. I am in the building with TM. Thank you all for having me on the show. I'm very, very excited to be here.
Welcome.
Oh, let's
good to have you.
Diversity, equity. So you
I can't hear you if you're talking.
We can't hear you at all now, TM.
You can't. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. So I see I have to. So we're going to have to. Here we go. So the one thing that I really appreciate about Vernita is the fact that she is absolutely fearless. When it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion, I've been on stages with her. I've been a part of discussions and conversations with her where she does not play when it comes to representation. She's from a strong lineage, a strong line of people who have been standing up for black people and black people's rights for years. But she is unapologetic and she's fearless about the cause, right? She does not back down when it comes to the phrase Black Lives Matter. She don't mince her words at all. And my question to start off, after she tells us a little bit more about herself with an official introduction, I'd like her to tell us like where that fearlessness comes from. Ladies and gentlemen, again, Ms. Vernita Adele.
Oh, I love it. So thank you all for having me. It's your girl, Vernita Adele, and thank you for the introduction, TM. I'm excited to be here with everyone on the show. So, yes, America's Hot Sauce. It's funny because I feel like I, like many people over the last year and a half, 18 months, I was deeply impacted by the murder of George Floyd. And when I say about being deeply impacted, that comes in the form of I feel like where I had been asleep, I was now awakened in a way that I could not any longer sit by and play my role, the role that is so often handed to us as black people to uphold the system of white supremacy. And what that looks like, meaning that like any system, everybody has their role. So white people have a role, especially here in the U.S., white people have a role, black people have a role in order to maintain the structure of white supremacy. And so what that looked like was, you know, accepting the unacceptable, being in spaces, predominantly white spaces where, you know, particularly if you want to frame this conversation around things like corporate America or opportunities as small business owners, as entrepreneurs, there was always this kind of glass ceiling, if you will. And it was our role to stay in our place in one way or another. And so over the last year, I no longer found it acceptable for myself to be in that place. Now, in terms of my family and background, I'm originally from my family is originally from New Orleans, Louisiana. I grew up in upstate New York. I now live in Brooklyn, New York. And as TM and I were getting into this conversation today, my heart definitely goes out to all of my people in Louisiana. We're looking forward to doing some things around Hurricane Ida and the recovery efforts, which will be ongoing. But it's like I have the fortitude of family members who were committed to thrive. So it wasn't necessarily like I come from a line of people who were in the march of civil rights per se, but that it was more along the lines of like our commitment to thriving, education, moving into spaces where we could have better opportunities, things like that. I just came back from Los Angeles where we celebrated the life of my eldest aunt who recently passed away at the age of 94, and she moved from New Orleans to Los Angeles back in 1954, determined to have a better life, to seek better opportunities, to escape oppression, and to escape, honestly, the Ku Klux Klan. So when I look at her life and my elders and ancestors like that, I said I have no reason but to use my voice to ensure that the generations coming behind me have opportunities that I did not have.
So, Bernita just shared that she's from a family of those who have been focused on thriving, right? So, you know, she didn't march with Martin Luther King. Folks didn't march with Martin Luther King, right? But they've always been focused on black folks thriving. She said her aunt, who recently passed away, God bless her soul, right, at 94 years old, escape the Ku Klux Klan.
Wow.
Escape the Ku Klux Klan. Now, recently, okay. And let me just go back a few steps. Bernita and I actually met through the Breakfast of Champions, the Millionaire Breakfast Club, right? We get up at 5 o'clock every morning. Like, we're nuts. Like, absolutely nuts. 5 o'clock every morning. She just clarified, 4:15. For me, it's 4:45, right? So she's up way before me. Every morning, we're nuts inside the Breakfast of Champions, but that's where we actually met, where Glenn Lundy is the founder. And recently, Glenn shared a story that really pricked my heart, because anyone who knows this show knows that I talk about overcoming fear, right, and how I overcame fear. And just, I'm going to do that. This is like a quiz right now. Do either one of you remember how I overcame fear?
You know I have a bad memory. No.
Okay. So drugs is bad for the brain.
Yeah, say no.
Say no to drugs.
Say no.
Because I've told this story quite a few times. Say no to drugs.
It's legal.
Right?
It is legal, huh?
Well, it is legal now, so we can forget about it now because it's legal in many states.
It's just been a long time.
So the story,
you see what I'm saying?
It has been. So ultimately, right, I overcame fear of driving at night, right? That was the fear, driving at night.
Oh, yeah.
In Virginia. Yeah, why? Because why?
Because of the
being stopped by the people.
Police, right. But no, breaking down on the side of the road and being like in the middle of nowhere, because it was like 13, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't it right?
That's right, 13. So you have to remember the story, right? Driving at night on the back road, and my fear was that the Ku Klux Klan would come out of the woods. I don't know where I got this from. I don't know, you know, where in my mind, right? But it talks. But that's what we do, right? We perpetuate things in our mind based on what we know and our experiences, right? And so.
Right.
Glenn Lundy recently told a story about the Ku Klux Klan in a rally that was being organized in Kentucky. And he talked about this rally being so interesting to him and him just not understanding, like, why this is happening, right, and how this is something that we raise people to do. There were kids at this rally. And how do he know there was kids at the rally? Because he went to the rally.
Oh, wow.
He actually went.
As a black man.
To the rally. This is a black man who was so intrigued.
He's racially ambiguous by looks. So,
well, facts. And as Bernita Patel busts out laughing, she's dying laughing off of the racial ambiguous statement.
Hey.
Because it's very true, right? It's very true. Nevertheless, this is a black man who he could be Italian. Bernita says that's negative. He could not be Italian in America. He would not pass in an Italian community.
Okay,
listen.
I stab in the dark. Go ahead. Okay.
Can someone calm that student down over there? Can someone
not that like him.
Can someone calm the student down? He went to the rally, folks. He went to the rally and he got an education. Out of going to the rally, he saw that there were kids at the Ku Klux Klan rally, right? And what is the point? The point is this. Bernita said her aunt ran away from the Ku Klux Klan. I had visions that I would be attacked by the Ku Klux Klan. It speaks to our experiences in America, right? And some of that still exists today in 2021. Diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. When you hear those terms, what does it mean to both of you? When you just hear those four words, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, it's loaded.
It is.
It could mean you are wholly equal, you know what I mean, like where everyone is being seen and heard, and like that's what it is to me in a nutshell. Everyone being seen and heard.
That's what it should mean.
Right. But it's splotchy.
Equally.
You know what I'm saying? It's like a small amount being allowed to be included is looked at as inclusion instead of it being like equal part. Representation, you know, for whomever is to be represented, whether, you know, it's a minority group, whether it's women, whether it's men, whether it's some, you know, by gender, you know. So that's why I say it's loaded, I mean, because there are levels to it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But
in a nutshell, I see it.
Yeah, in a nutshell, I see it as just everyone being able to be seen and heard.
Absolutely. Anything you add to that, Hachaka?
I agree with Philo that it should mean inclusivity and opportunity for everyone on an equal level. But it definitely does not.
But it definitely does not always equal that, certainly, especially not here in the United States of America, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
This is Social Lab TM Hyman Radio. We are talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging with our special guest tonight, Ms. Bernita Adele White. We'll be back right now.
So we are back. Bernita Adele here. Thank you for those comments, Hot Chocolate and CeeLo. I really appreciate it because I agree around this idea of what equity and inclusion, diversity, and it's funny. I actually often use the word accessibility instead of belonging. And belonging sometimes can be synonymous with inclusion. But the idea of, like, there's this gap, right, between what things should be and how
right.
they are. And I think TM hit something on the head when he said, here in the United States of America. Okay, so here in the U.S., where we could frame this conversation, because it does also apply to other parts of the world, but the issue here is that we are dealing with a broken system. And the way
right.
I always like to illustrate this, if we were, you know, looking at, thinking about a visual, we thought about a tree. Now, theoretically, in the world, the tree should be upright and two people, let's say representing two groups, a majority group and a underrepresented group, should all have the same tools, the same opportunities, the same equipment to reach the fruit of that tree. That fruit meaning your quality of life, that meaning your livelihood, your ability to build wealth. Everyone has the same. But that's not the world we live in. We live in a world where that tree is bent to one side, favoring one group over the other, making it easily
right.
accessible to grab the fruit for one person, and it's almost impossible having the same level of tools, or let's think of it maybe with a ladder. Like, everybody has the same height ladder. Well, one ladder
mm-hmm.
is the fruit in the broken tree, and the other ladder is not. What equity is, and I'm also a big proponent, I always put equity first over diversity, because there is the weaponization of diversity, but I'll circle back to that. I really like to focus on equity, because in the current system that we are working with, equity allows us to close that gap. The gap for the person with the short ladder that doesn't reach the fruit, well, that person is not deficient. They're not inferior. They are not lacking in talent or resource or ability or willingness, but they do not have the same tool to have the same access to the tree. So that person needs a longer ladder, and that translates into our world as programs and intentional creation of opportunities. It looks like companies who make it a point to think about where they recruit from, including HBCUs, that look at having a certain percentage of talent of color or black talent coming, even from predominantly white universities. They need to be intentional about recruiting and having a equitable pool of potential employees of color and black employees. That is extending that ladder to close the gap. What often happens is, hey, we're going to treat everyone the same, but the system that we're treating everyone the same under is broken, and so then, therefore, there are people left out. So that's
right.
I always like to push the piece around equity, because as long as the system is broken, treating everyone the same actually does not solve the problem. It always will leave somebody out, if that makes sense.
It does.
Of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. Makes sense. Go for it. Jump into Sheila.
Oh, yeah. I was just – it just made me think back to how being in – like working at Time Warner, right? Like, I know I use that example a lot, but it was like the way that it was set up, it was – you had to pay attention, but the way that it was set up, it was like the good old boy network was pushed forward. But I'll say this, majority of them had families. So they pushed them into training and made sure they had training. But the minorities, I saw the classes I took were majority white people in the classes. Like, I might have been the only minority in most of the classes. And you might have, like, one other black guy in it. But it was so far and few. But they were not pushed into training. And that didn't mean that it wasn't a lot of black males there. There were, but they weren't pushed into training. They weren't pushed into leadership positions, not at the same rate. And seemingly, yeah, you know what I mean. Like, the ratio of white to black was. It seemed that it was more black than it was white. So you see what I'm saying? It was like, even if the numbers if the minority numbers are higher, and when I say minority, I mean, you know, like race-wise, if those numbers are higher, it's still systematically set up for white people to be pushed forward and pushed up in the hierarchy, period.
And I think that's due to the broken system, right? You know, the broken system that was referenced. And then think about it. I mean, when you think about the education system in the United States of America, I mean, think about what's pushed in the lesson books, in the history books. It's all, you know, it's been bent, to say the least, right? you know, it's lacking truth, to say the least. And even when you talk about how, you know, a certain segment is pushed into leadership and into business, you know, why isn't finance taught in school? Why isn't entrepreneurship taught in school? That's a part of the broken system. And I think there's a certain intentionality, right, that comes along with it. Understand that the Rockefellers were very clear in their stance, right? They did not want to create an environment of entrepreneurs and a bunch of thinkers, right? They didn't want to push everybody into leadership and push everybody into business. They wanted a segment of laborers and workers, employees, that comes with a certain mindset, right? So if we expect a certain mindset, a mindset of laborers and employees, then we're going to hold back on specific information and knowledge, okay? Let me fast forward to 2021. And for anyone who's just joining the show, you're going to have to go back, check it out at the top. Our special guest tonight is Miss Vernita Adele White, and she is founder of America's Hot Sauce, and she keeps it hot and saucy because she's all about accountability. She's all about diversity and inclusion. She laughs, right? Diversity, inclusion, equity. And she says she doesn't use belonging too much. She uses the word accessibility. Accessibility. Fast forward 2021. May I ask each of you, how has being raised in America as young black girls, how has that impacted you as black women when you look back, right, from the trajectory of being little black girls in America to now being black women in America? What has evolved? What has changed? How has the lack of diversity, the lack of inclusion impacted you? If all three of you can answer, you know, in no particular order.
Well, sure. I'll be happy to jump in. Vernita here. And, well, I appreciate the question. I think it made me think back, and I do want to circle back to the anecdote around the KKK. But I think over the last, again, year and a half, 18 months, it has shown me how much I was indoctrinated into this country, no matter how many ways, you know, my parents, my family, particularly my older brother, which my older brother and sister-in-law are Pan-African revolutionaries, even with all of the reinforcement that I did have, I was still playing my role as a black woman who upholds white supremacy in this country, because that is what I was indoctrinated with from birth. So growing up as a little white, as a little black girl in a predominantly white neighborhood, and went to, my schools were pretty diverse, but there was not a emphasis. I went basically to Catholic school my whole life, K through 12, and that did not particularly reinforce a concept of black culture, of being black. It was still, you know, fitting in with the majority. And then I could say the same thing about my experience of attending an Ivy League university. There was, even with all of the history with a school like Cornell University, you look back at, you know, the black students who came through with the Black Panthers in 1969, the Willis Ray Hall takeover, Ujamaa Residential College. Like, Cornell has a lot of history around black students and activism, and yet I still took in this idea of basically I should feel lucky that I'm in any of the white spaces and receiving any of the opportunities that I should have. And then I acted accordingly to that concept of, like, I should just be grateful to be here. So I'm a very different person now in having recognized that as long as that's the way that I show up in spaces, I'm contributing to the problem versus looking at the solution in terms of we need to create our own spaces as black people. As long as we are trying to assimilate into predominantly white spaces, we're going to be continuing to have these conversations. Now, it's also challenging because black people, African Americans, direct descendants of slaves in this country, are a landless people. We have been separated from the continent, and we do not have our own space in this country. And so, therefore, it does make it very challenging to just say, it makes it not so simple to simply say create our own spaces. And we know throughout history that many of the times, Tulsa, Oklahoma, that black people have taken time to become self-sufficient, those initiatives have been burned to the ground.
Yeah.
Literally burned to the ground. So how many times do we recover from that? And not to say that we don't keep working at it, but that does take it.
Right. It makes them harder.
So much harder. I mean, because it also has generational, it adds to the generational trauma where the fortitude to keep standing up starts to look different. Like Tulsa, the Black Wall Street has never bounced back in its same form as it was 100 years ago, but you have now resistance in a different form in terms of keeping the story alive and things like that, but it certainly does not have the same economic impact, because at the end of the day, I always say what we're really talking about for equity and inclusion, diversity and accessibility is economic. Particularly when we're talking about black folks, it's economic. And the last thing I was saying, TM asked me what makes me fearless? It was my own personal impact. So America's Hot Sauce, that brand comes from an article that I published at the end of last year, an award-winning article that was named Best of the Beast in the Daily Beast, calling out systemic racism at Town & Country magazine, and the Hearst Corporation calling for accountability at the Hearst Corporation, which is a former client of mine. I worked with Town & Country for 4 years, and coming out of this, in this post-George Floyd movement, recognized that if I have a voice, I need to speak up around the disparity of Town & Country and historically white brands like that, exploiting our black star power, putting black celebrities on the cover of their magazines, black designers, fashion, influence, and style, to sell more magazines. Not because they have a vested commitment and interest in the black community, but then they have black people on their covers, but then behind the scenes, they systematically oppress opportunity and advancement for black people. And so my favorite line from that article is, black people are the definitive hot sauce on an otherwise bland white America. And that is the genesis of America's Hot Sauce as a brand. And I think it just going through the process of standing up for myself and for not just for myself but for others who lent their stories to that article and those who came out after the article was published, that is where a lot of my fearlessness comes from, because the pain of staying silent began to outweigh the pain of the potential consequences.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the great Bernita Adele White. You're inside the Social Lab Team on the radio. It is 6:34 on the West Coast, 9:34 here in ATL. We'll be right back after this.
Talk radio.
CeeLo, go ahead. I know you have something to say, as well as hot chocolate.
go ahead, hot chocolate.
I was just going to say that for me, from a little girl inclusivity, inclusion, diversity was a little mixed up for me, only because of the region that I grew up in, and it was mostly African Americans were the minority. We'll say that. In El Paso, Texas, when I was growing up. So when we relocated to the Hampton Roads area, things were of a completely different world for me. I don't think I had ever, I had never been exposed to my culture in such an abundance. And even still, fast forward to now, living where I live now in Atlanta, Georgia, this is definitely the most culture that I've been exposed to. It's sort of comparable to the Hampton Roads area, but I think it has the 757 where I was kind of beat with the diversity of the culture, not just African-American, but other cultures as well. And for me, that brought more of a comfort versus some of the other regions that I'd lived in growing up, especially in my professional career. It gives me more of a sense of security where I don't have to deal with the quote-unquote good old boys network where, you know, I stick out like a sore thumb and everything I do is critiqued times 10 just because, you know, there's a chance that I could become the angry black woman if they don't like whatever, you know, I present or my idea or my perspective. So it fluctuates still for me. I guess in personal things and travel, personal relationships, but overall, this is the most comfortable that I've been culture-wise.
In your entire life?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's real.
Yeah.
You know, CeeLo.
Well. Well, being the little mixed child of the group,
the little mixed child.
Yeah. I grew up and so weird because I was raised around nothing but black people. White people looked at me funny, looked at my mama funny. Nobody did it when I was with my dad, but when I was with my mom, I guess it was such a stark contrast in skin complexion. I don't know. And I'm light skinned, so I don't know what they saw. But so it made me grow up to be more aggressive towards, aggressive towards white people. Not like just being nasty to them for no reason, but when I would deal with them, you know, it'd be less laughter and jokes because I grew up like, I don't know, it's like I wasn't black enough, but a dancer wasn't white enough. So that whole fitting in, that never happened. But I guess creating my own space, though, of just accepting me for being who I am and then people coming to my space, you know. So, but it still made me an angry person because there wasn't any, like, Let's see, I don't know. There was, like, no positivity when there was social interaction between, like, I didn't get to see inclusion in stuff like outside of just being included because you're in a space and there's no other choice. You know what I'm saying? Like in school, where you have to be in plays or you have to be in stuff, and you could be the only white kid. And that's what it was almost like being the only white kid in school. I was the only white kid. But, yeah. Like, I don't know. It made me grow up angry.
How does that feel as an adult? How does that feel as an adult? Are you still angry as an adult as you were as a child, specific
to
your
therapy.
View on inclusion? Okay. Therapy help.
Yeah,
okay.
Not after therapy. Therapy help, yeah. Therapy help. But, I mean, I still, you know, like I say the most comfortable, when you were saying, you know, as far as culture, hot topic, I'll say the most inclusive place I've ever lived was Philadelphia. That place right there was so, I mean, as crazy and as wild as it was where I was living, yeah, I still felt comfortable walking around. Like, there was nowhere I couldn't go. And it was mixed, you know, it was Irish and Puerto Rican and black and white. You know what I mean? It's just like everybody is right there. Like, that is like the most, I don't know, at home I've ever felt in my life was living in Philadelphia. Yeah.
What I find interesting in what both of you stated was you referenced geography. You referenced geography and how living in certain parts of the country made you feel versus living in other parts of the country. And you called it out specifically. You said, you know, Georgia, right? You said, you know, Philly. And I think that is to be – I think that's true, right? I think there are certainly parts of the South and parts of the North. As well as other parts of the country. But, you know, Vernita, I wonder if there's a report that actually reflects the most inclusive cities, the most inclusive states in the country. Have you seen that? And how do you respond, you know, to the feedback?
No, that's interesting. Off the top of my head, I definitely can't say that I know of a specific report by region, but that's interesting, the thought of, like, the most inclusive state or the most inclusive part of the U.S. It's funny because the first thing that comes to mind is you can sometimes look at it from, and I hate to use the word political, standpoint of, you know, blue states have a tendency to be more inclusive than red states. But within those blue and red states, you're still going to find, depending on which city, which community, what suburb, which neighborhood that you stumble upon, how inclusive it is. So I think it is challenging. I would be interested in doing a little bit of digging. I'd be happy to follow up with you. A TM and Hot Chocolate and CeeLo on whether or not there is an existing study. But that idea of, like, what's the most inclusive part, I definitely agree that we'll have different experiences depending on what part of the country that we go to. However, it's the real work is I don't think there's a blanket anywhere. Like, even I live in New York City. Like, that's like the melting pot of melting pots. And there's a lot of racism in New York
City.
There's a lot of sexism in New York City. There's a lot of appearance, we're seemingly inclusive because there's a lot of people of diverse background all living in the same space or area or working together, but there is not a genuine, authentic relationship all the time between those different groups. Like, even within New York City, you have, like, Little Africa, Little Italy, you know, Brooklyn to Harlem or Manhattan, like the Staten Island. Staten Island is incredibly white, with this, like, pocket of black,
so many white people in my life.
Communities. Right. And it's like, and so depending on where air you go in, it could be just as dangerous for a black person to stumble into a historically or predominantly white neighborhood in New York City as it could be in Texas, just depending on where you are. So I think that's an interesting thought, and it actually made me think you brought up Glenn's story at the beginning of the show around, you know, being in a state of Kentucky, which is a red state, and going to a Ku Klux Klan rally. So I think what's interesting, I have two aunts that have KKK stories. Now, my aunt who moved out to California, she never told me the details, but that was just amongst her motivation of leaving New Orleans and moving to California. I have another aunt, my mother's sister-in-law, and why she and my uncle left New Orleans and moved to Maryland back in the 1970s. Same thing. The Ku Klux Klan was alive and well in the 1970s. Wasn't that long ago.
Right.
And so her story was more hands-on, and I started telling that in Breakfast with Champions. The difference, though, is that Glenn had the option. We have progressed to a point where a black person can roll up on a Ku Klux Klan rally and walk away alive from it. Same thing when you think about, if you all have ever heard of Daryl Davis, a dark-skinned black man and musician who over the last generations or so has made it a point. He has this calling where he befriends members of the Ku Klux Klan, and he has, in those relationships, brought over 200 KKK members, have dropped their roles, dropped their status, and have let go of being a part of their organization because they now recognize that they recognize Daryl Davis as a human being, as a fellow brother, not as someone who is less than and inferior, which is a whole special thing unto itself. But, you know, as Glenn was telling his story of, like, I went and I watched and observed. My aunt didn't observe. My aunt went to the grocery store. She was living her life. She was a new wife and mother. My older cousin Toya was in the back seat of the car at the age of three at the time. She went over the bridge to get to the grocery store, and on the way back, the bridge was filled of Ku Klux Klan members. And it wasn't just like, oh, I drove by, and there was this rally happening. No, they surrounded her car. They banged on the car. They put their torches in her window.
Wow.
Think about it. You're a 20-something-year-old black woman, young
it
wife.
It has to be
mother,
terrifying.
Went about your daily life. She went to the grocery store.
Right.
So when I told that story and said about, you know, she was lucky to be alive that day, it wasn't because she rolled up and observed and took some photos. They surrounded her car in full intimidation, and for whatever reason, they made a decision to let her go that day.
Wow. Right, because they could have went
so many other ways.
Ladies and gentlemen, our special guest tonight, Miss Vernita Adele White, just telling a powerful account of a family member, right, that escaped the Ku Klux Klan. Tonight our conversation has been about accessibility. It's been about leadership in business. It's been about exposure to the culture, light skin versus dark skin, right? Not black enough, but not white enough. These are still concepts that we're dealing with today in America in 2021, and it's about to be 2022. Diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and accessibility. That and much more. It is 9:48 New York City. What's up, Brooklyn? We got your own right here in ATL tonight hanging out with us. We appreciate it. Listen, if you don't take away anything else from tonight, take away awareness. Take away the experiences that have just been shared, right? The vulnerable shares from black women raised in America. They have America at their fiber, right? All within them, right? Within their soul, within their heart, everything about them, right, is American. But you heard the accounts for yourself. You heard them describe, right, how they feel, how they felt living in America for yourself. Racism, sexism is real. But let's slide into how we turn the tide, right? How do we move forward effectively. It is absolutely about accessibility. It is absolutely about authentic relationships, right? It's about being able to pause and realize that we are all humans. There is not one person that's less than. And when you just pause, when you pause and you consider that we're equal, and when you consider, like, there's no reason for hate at all, specifically when you have, like, no knowledge of the person that you're hating. Pause and get to know. Pause and listen. Actively listen to other people's experiences. That's what diversity is about, in my opinion. It's about taking time to get to know, get to learn something that you didn't know prior to you walking in the room, prior to you speaking at the podium, right? If you can learn, then you can grow. But you have to actively listen in order to be able to learn, in order to be able to grow. That's diversity, right? That's diversity. Authentic relationships. Business and leadership. Business and leadership. That's what we have to level up in our culture. We have to become more exposed to business and leadership and finances and money, and we have to stop being scared about talking about money. They say scared money don't make no money, but guess what? I'll help you even better than that one. If you scared to talk about money, you can't make no money.
Absolutely.
The hell with scared money, can't make no money. The hell with that. Let's get to the fact that people don't even like talking about money. Money is still very taboo, right? We still feel like, get out of my business. Listen, you don't have no damn business. You broke as hell. What are you talking about?
You broke me.
That's called a hobby.
What are you talking about? Get out of your business. What are you talking about?
Called a hobby.
You don't have no business. The problem is you're not around people who are helping you grow. People need to get in your business, as a matter of fact. Ask for help. Don't be afraid to let people know that you don't know. Because guess what? We know already anyway. We can tell you don't know. Because if you did, you would have some business.
Yo,
teamwork makes the dream work. You feel me? Come on. Y'all know we 1,000% real up in here. And after having a queen that then dropped such fearlessness, right? I mean, come on, man. Come on. Listen, we've been down long enough. We got to level up. We've been down long enough. Vernita Adele has a clothing line that I want her to drop her social so we can follow her. We're going to take this conversation over to Clubhouse in about 7 minutes, and we're going to kick it up in overdrive because, you know, I know some of y'all have never really, you know, heard a black woman just flat out, you know, speak white supremacy, you know, out of mouth. You know, outside of, like, you know, who, like Sister Soulja. Y'all remember Sister Soulja? She used to call them all kinds of stuff. Sister Soulja. You know what I'm saying? Yo, that's who Vernita Adele reminds me of. She reminds me of a 2021 Sister Soulja. But she's very fashionable, though. She's like a supermodel soldier. Right?
Supermodel soldier.
I love it. I love it.
I'm going to go with it. I like it.
Yeah.
Supermodel.
Oh, I love that. I love that, TM. TM, is this ginger ale for me? He done brought a ginger ale in here, but I wasn't sure if it was for him.
Go for it.
Okay. I don't know.
He'll share.
But no, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up because, you know, I mentioned too, man, when you talk about equity and inclusion, diversity, accessibility, impacts every aspect of life. So that includes, I mentioned at the top that my people are originally from New Orleans. We went through Hurricane Katrina in 2005, now been impacted again by Hurricane Ida, fortunately not to the same extent of Hurricane Katrina, but it's still bad. It's still real bad. There's still parts of New Orleans and particularly areas to the west, to the north that are still without power. We really need to take care of our black elders, a lot of times whom don't have the same resources
right.
as their white counterparts. in terms of, and not just being able to evacuate. I heard in a clubhouse room in a fundraiser last week, you know, evacuating is a privilege. It's not a given for many. That not we assume like, oh, why don't they just leave? Leave and go where? Or do they have transportation? Do they have the funds to leave? Do they have a place to go? And so there's more than just this fortitude of I'm going to ride out the storm that goes into some people not evacuating, and that triples, you know, quadruples when we start talking about our elders. They don't have the same capacity as they may have had 20 or 30 or 40 years ago to maneuver and navigate the storm. And so when we look at equity and inclusion in the shape of a hurricane, right, here comes the same, those same gaps that we talked about, that same broken system where those who have resources are able to recover more quickly, who are able to evacuate, who are able to pull in favors around documentation so that they can stay into their home, that Black people aren't always able to do. So I know for Hurricane Katrina, my grandmother on my father's side, she was in the lower Ninth Ward. Her house sat under 15 feet of water for 2 weeks, and it took her 3 years to move back into her home, 3 years, and she
wow.
had help. She had a family
right.
to help her do that. So many people do not have help or resources, and they can never came back to New Orleans. And then what happened to their home that had been in their family for generations and had not necessarily been with a will or with insurance, and then it became the property of the city. And that house
right.
was taken from that family. That's another deficit in wealth that creates that widens the wealth gap. So the property that you did have has now been taken from you because it wasn't in, you know, you are who's the person who might be the grandchild or the great-grandchild now living in that house never got the documentation that the house was left to you. You can't prove that.
Right.
And so this equity and inclusion piece stretches on so many different levels. So it's funny, now my premise for my brand, Human Intonation, it started out of my family's experience with Hurricane Katrina. It also is very closely tied to right after Katrina, I lost one of my closest cousins to AIDS, and now health equity, whole other conversation around equity and inclusion and our health. White people get a cold, Black people get the flu. We saw it with the coronavirus, the disparity of who were the faces of those most greatly impacted by COVID-19, particularly at the beginning of the pandemic. Black, pre-existing conditions, lack of insurance resources, being in neighborhoods that did not have adequate health care, disparity. But with my apparel brand today, now very much inspired by America's Hot Sauce, I'm looking at, I started the brand using fashion to raise awareness and funding around the recovery efforts in Katrina, around HIV and AIDS. But now as I kind of pivot that, I want the brand to really be a beacon around equity and inclusion and anti-racism. So I am rocking a shirt tonight that I created for the 10-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. It is a powder blue women's tank that says, engage, empower, transform for Katrina 10. But look forward, we're going to have some T-shirts coming from Black People Are America's Hot Sauce, Black Families Thriving Are the Revolution, Self-care is the revolution for Black people and so forth. And you can find
how
that
can they
at Human Intonation or at Vernita Adele.
One more time.
On Instagram, you can find me at Vernita Adele, and the brand is at Human Intonation.
Vernita Adele, this has been a dynamic discussion. We have less than 60 seconds left. In this particular hour, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take the conversation over to Clubhouse right now. So jump, meet us over there. Listen, diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, accessibility, that's what it's about. Let's level up in our homes. Let's level up in our communities. A good night. We appreciate y'all. Let's go.
See him live, talk radio show. See him live, talk radio show. Live.
Talk radio show. Talk radio show. Real talk. Real talk. Talk radio show. CM Hyman live. CM Hyman live. CM Hyman live. Talk radio show. CM Hyman live. CM Hyman live. CM Hyman live. Talk radio.